Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted. This is your trigger warning. This podcast contains unfiltered conversations about trauma, abuse, and survival. Discretion is advised. This is not therapy or medical advice, just real people sharing real stories. So please take care of yourself and pause if you need to. If this conversation hits home, grab the book Survival Mode Exit Plan, your raw, unapologetic blueprint to break free. Available now by scanning the QR code or clicking the link in the comments. Hello, hello, and welcome back to another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. I am your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and today we have Sue. So Sue, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, Leticia. Great to be with you today. Thanks for the opportunity. My name is Sue Bowles, and I am the founder of My Step Ahead LLC, where you only have to be a step ahead to help the person behind you. And we'll get into where that all came from, because that all came from my story that we'll share here in just a few minutes. But I am an ACC certified, master certified life coach and mental health coach and author and speaker. And I am all about empowering people to share their stories while they're healing. And I work with those who feel bruised, beaten, and broken by the world, and I help them rewrite their narratives so they can begin to experience and live the life they don't necessarily think they deserve, but they really do. So it's neat to see that transformation happen in my clients and watch them start experiencing life as it's meant to be lived.
That's beautiful. I mean, definitely helping people rewrite their narratives. I mean, that is life change and that is freedom for a lot of us. So tell us your story to and through survival mode, as I like to say.
Yeah, well, I entered survival mode and didn't even know it when I was 7 years old. I was raped by a classmate after school in first grade one day, and kept it a secret for 15 years. First person I told was my dean of students in college, and it was 15 years after the effect. After the situation. And I didn't know that I had just taken my first step to healing. In between there, though, there was a lot of other stuff. You know, trauma literally rewires your brain, and it's scientifically proven. So I didn't have a chance to be a normal kid. I went right into survival mode. I shut down emotionally. I was protecting myself. I was on guard and trying to just survive. I didn't know what had happened. In the 70s, rape was not on the radar. It wasn't something to be discussed. It wasn't anything being discussed. Nobody knew to ask anything. I certainly didn't know to say anything. And it took me a long time to be able to say that the only person who did anything wrong that day was my perpetrator. It took a long time to get to that point. You know, in between when you're 7 and when you're 22, you go through junior high and you go to middle school and all the things that happened through that. And then you get to high school. And by this time, I was searching for my identity. And all these things were things I've learned after the fact, but I didn't really notice at that moment in time. I was searching for my identity. I was trying to figure out, did I really matter? Was I important? Did people like me? And it wasn't so much did they like me, but would they accept me for me and not the mess I felt inside? Because inside I felt very broken and I was very afraid of rejection. I was afraid and fearful and almost paralyzed that no one would accept me for who I was and not judge me. And instead they would only see me for what happened and somehow tell me that it was my fault even though decades later I would learn that it wasn't, because that's all I had been told, not so much in words, but in sentiment. My brain interpreted things that I was the one that was always wrong, and that I was the one that had to make things right, no matter what that looked like. I felt that I if I was seen, then I had value. And I plugged my calendar full of activity so that I was out there, I was seen. Because again, that's where I felt I was valued, when I was seen. And through that, I didn't learn about boundaries. I didn't learn about standing up for myself. I didn't learn about life balance. And then I started hurting myself even more. And that fed into an eating disorder. I am in recovery from OSFED, which is other specified feeding and eating disorder. And even that, I didn't even really identify until 2016. We're talking 5 decades after everything now. So it had a long tentacle of effect that I'm still working my way through right now. But through all that, as lonely as I felt, as desperate as I felt, I've twice considered ending my life. I've struggled with depression and anxiety and all those things. Through all that, there was some kind of nagging optimism. And my junior year of college, I came to a personal relationship with Christ, and I'm a Christ follower. And that was the thread of hope that got me through the rest. And that nagging optimism wouldn't let me go. When my parents divorced, and it was that was the second time I considered ending my life. So I had all this dysfunction, all of this anger, all of this disillusionment and desperation building up from the time I was 7 to the time I was 22. And I was in survival mode right from the start, and I didn't know it.
I actually recognize that I too have been in survival mode from about 7 years old. And I didn't recognize it until I wrote my memoir a couple years ago. And it was in that process of like, oh my God, like this has been decades. Like it's literally been decades of me being in this space. A lot of people don't recognize survival mode until they're out of it, which is one of the reasons why I think these conversations are so important. So, what your relationship with Christ, I'm sure, has played a significant role in you exiting survival mode. But what did that look like for you, that journey out of it?
Wow. My journey out of survival mode didn't even start till 2014. And that might sound really crazy, but when you are stuck in survival mode, it takes a lot just to get level ground. So to rewind a little bit, and I was in and out of counseling for a number of times, because I was in counseling when I told my dean of students, and I asked him to go with me the next week so I could tell the counselor there. And even then, I was shadow boxing, as my dean called it, and it took a while just to share the story again. Even though I had shared my story initially with Ed Hyland, the dean of students, I didn't really start digging in until 2014. That might sound crazy, because that's, it's what year was that? 1982 to 2014. So in between there's a lot still going on. And what it looked like was, I'd been out of counseling for a while. And in 2005, a very dear friend of mine had died from stage 4 breast cancer. And 3 years later, in 2008, I was grieving her as if it was yesterday. My eating disorder triggers were starting to come up again. My red flags were starting to come up. And my pastor got me connected with a counselor who specialized in eating disorders. And I looked at her and said, if we start this, I am not stopping until we're done. I was that my mantra going in, and this was just something that had became the driving a driving force, was a manageable level of tolerable existence is no longer an option. And I'm going to say that again so you catch the nuance. A manageable level of tolerable existence is no longer an option. I got tired of living the way I was. I got tired of constantly being stuck in a cycle, trying to figure out what was wrong with me and why the heck can't I get out of this? Why can't I change? And it ended up being that I can't change because I don't have the power. It had to be the power of Christ in me. With that, I started digging in with my counselor. Her name's Amanda. She's with Grace Recovery Counseling over here in the States. And she, we talked that it took us 6 years to get me stronger in the present before we could even go back to the past. And that's an important point because I think some people enter counseling and therapy thinking, oh, this is going to fix me and I'll be fine. And I just got to dig in and we'll be good. And then snap fingers and I'm okay. But there's a lot of life that happens, and there's a lot of things that we have learned that we have to unlearn. And we've talked earlier about neuroscience and about neurotransmitters and that trauma rewires your brain. I didn't have a chance to be a normal kid. I didn't know what it was like to be carefree and just go out and have fun and laugh and play and not be on guard for what's next, what's happening, who's coming after me, that kind of thing. So when you add all that on there, and then college, and then professional life, and then I was a caregiver for my mom, there was so much. I didn't know what a boundary was. I was letting myself be emotionally manipulated. I didn't know how to speak up for myself. I was still searching for my identity and running myself into the ground even more and just getting desperate because I just needed to know I mattered, and I didn't know where to find that. So we dug 6 years to get me stronger in the present, so that at least I had some stable ground to stand on. So then we could start going to the past. In 2014, there was a movie out called Ragamuffin, and it was based on the life of the late Christian musician, Rich Mullins. And if you're familiar with Rich's music, Awesome God, Step by Step, or a couple of his big songs. And that movie was a really hard watch for the first 20 minutes because it hit so close to home. I'd gone to a screening, brought my mom and some friends. There's a lot of something in my eye, Mom, because I didn't want to be, I couldn't be found out. That was the theme of my entire life, because I didn't want to be found out. I got tired of lying about what I ate or didn't eat to cover my eating disorder. I got tired of deceiving others, and I was deceiving myself in the process. And even played out just by wiping tears and not wanting to be found out that I was crying in a movie. That's how bad it was. So a little later in the year, in 2014, over the summer, the family and friends and the movie producer were talking about maybe having a retreat around the themes in the movie. So in the fall, they had what they called a Ragamuffin retreat, and I attended it. Now, one of the things with this retreat was they would open up a group in Facebook just for the people in the retreat. We were all strangers. The only thing we had in common was this movie. And they courageously and boldly asked us to share our stories. Now, mind you, I had not shared my story publicly. This was 2014. I hadn't even started writing my book yet. And after about 3 days of lurking and encouraging others, it was my turn. It just starts pumping and you're like, all right, I got to do this. And I shared my story, and all day long, I'm sitting there checking Facebook. I'm like, I know I'm going to be trashed. I know someone's going to tell me it's my fault. It's a deal. And here we are 11 years later, not one negative comment. Instead, it was your story inspires me. Your story gives me courage to share mine. I want to give you a hug. You're so inspiring. I want to get to know you. All these things that I hadn't been craving and didn't know how to find. So I went to the retreat and things broke. The first year, I had to own my story. And that alone is a critical first step because I hated my story. I was in denial about my story. And there came a point where I just totally broke down. And in a way, I kind of felt like the other 50 people on the retreat knew what was going on because I've been pretty open about it. And they knew that God and I were doing some serious work. I went into that retreat calling myself the holy exception, believing the lie that, here, generalities, everything in the Bible is good enough for everyone else but me. I was too screwed up, too far gone, and a total waste of space. I left there saying and starting to believe that Jesus Christ not only loves me, he likes me, and he's absolutely head over heels in love with me. The next year, I went back, and it became Walking Stick Retreats is the new name of it. And I went back, and I had to grieve my story because every story has a lot of loss. Mine has a lot. I've alluded to just a little bit of it. And every loss is worthy of being grieved. And I had not given myself permission to express emotions because emotions are the enemy of an eating disorder. So I was at war myself all the time because I couldn't be found out. That was an underlying theme. What would people say? What would people think? I wore masks. I wore masks to make people believe I was someone that I wasn't. And that added to more masks. So second year, I had to grieve my story, and that was very freeing. And the third year is when things started to change. In 2016 is when I walked away with the nugget, I am valuable to God. So in 2014, when the movie came out, was also the year that my brother was finishing up an 18-month prison sentence for a drunk driving accident. And he got home, and then he's like, you need to go on this retreat. I want you to go. You've been with mom a year and a half without me. Go. And I looked at my counselor, and something happened with my brother. He was in town. And so I saw, man, I haven't seen you for a while. Where you been? He said, in prison. I said, if he can be bold and direct about his story, why can't I? If anybody had reason to be ashamed, it'd be him. And instead, I looked at my counselor and said, I just want to be authentic. Get me ready. And we spent 6 weeks getting me ready. So that was the year we were dealing with the rape. So all of it started in 2014. Fast forward to 2025. I go to this retreat every year. We just had it a week ago from the time we're recording this. And every year I draw closer and closer and closer to God, and He reveals more and more and more of Himself to me. And I am now a speaker and an Amazon best-selling author and an ACC certified and Master Life and Mental Health coach and all these things. I'm doing your podcast over in England and all these crazy things, all with the message that you're not too far gone, you're not too screwed up, and you only have to be a step ahead to help the person behind you while you still figure it out. Because I still reach out to my counselor, Amanda. I had her earlier this morning. But I can still reach back to somebody else who's just starting their journey. And we have a human chain of support. That is the whole essence of my step ahead.
So you touched on so many things, and the first one that I really want to emphasize here is owning our stories, right? I think what keeps us stuck often is the narratives that we create about our stories and about how our stories will be received. And that essentially keeps us stuck because that is where the shame and the guilt and all of the negative emotions start generating from, that lack of ownership. And it doesn't mean that you have to say, I love everything that's happened to me. It's owning it. It's accepting that that is part of your journey. Because when we don't accept it, when we don't own it, we are fighting ourselves with our reality and then the story that we've created that is that opposes our reality. And that is a serious fight, because it doesn't allow us, we can't grow if we can't own our story. We can't grow until we can accept what we've been through. And I think that is like massively important. Another thing that you mentioned was not knowing who you were, right? Like you had been through these things, you had been on autopilot essentially for decades, and a huge part of your journey was now like, who am I? Who am I beyond this story, beyond what's happened to me? When I talk about accident survival mode, and the listeners who have been listening for a while will agree that I always say there are three phases to accident survival mode. Number one is awareness. Number two is reprogramming. And then number three is that reinvention. We get to decide who we are going to be. And then lastly, what I loved about what you said and the premise of your LLC, My Step Ahead, is that we don't have to have it all figured out to help someone else. And for me, I grew up understanding that Maslow's pyramid and self-actualization, and I never really had a clear understanding of self-actualization until I kind of been like, it isn't reaching perfection. It's getting to a state of owning our story, accepting our flaws, and then reaching back and helping
Yes.
someone else. Like, I really believe that's what it's about, right? Like, I've journeyed through this and I'm still journeying. Like, as you say, I still have a counselor, I still am on that journey. Healing isn't a destination, people, and I will say that 100 times. It's not a destination, it's a whole thing. We do not heal, we adjust our circumstances based on what we learn and the tools that we have to help us navigate life. But as you say, like, you can still be triggered 50 years later. You can
Oh,
still
yeah.
be triggered.
Oh,
And it's learning that every new phase and level that we enter, we have to not now learn how to adjust to that level, how to navigate that phase. And that's why healing is continuous, particularly if you've experienced trauma. So I loved so much of what you said. But what do you think is the biggest step to learning to navigate your emotions? Because you mentioned, with your eating disorder, that like dealing with your emotions highly triggering. So what was that first step, or what did it look like for you?
Yeah, and I can see it now. I'm on this side. You have to get the story straight. That's the only way I can put it. And what I mean by that, we were talking earlier about rewriting your narrative. So early on in my eating re disorder recovery, I was working with a dietitian, and my counselor, Amanda, had been recommending one for a while, and I was always able to sidestep it until 2016. Because obviously you were stirring all this stuff up, and then all the emotions start. And I was starting to write my book in 2015, and I had to take a break from it because it was too much to deal with. As 20, whatever year was around there, they had to take the break because it was too much to deal with the emotions and learn how to eat. Because that sounds weird, but if you know about eating disorders, you understand what that means. And one of the things that my dietitian talked about was my eating disorder voice. And I'd never heard that phrase before. And this is parallel to what we're talking about. I started learning that I had to start learning to separate myself. And there are a number of things that, that I would say, and I'd say something very, she's like, that's not you, that's your eating disorder voice. And I never heard that phrase. And it helped me start raising an awareness. And for me, I had to start calling out that voice. And what that looked like was that I, at one day at work, I was at work and carrying this at my refrigerator, and my brain just starts firing off. Because one of my triggers, one of my red flags, is I look in the refrigerator, get overwhelmed, shut the door, and just go snack instead. Because I learned to curb my hunger so I didn't have to be uncomfortable. And she was helping me realize that's my eating disorder voice and not me. So I got to the point where I'm like, Ed, shut up. Ed, shut up. And whatever your eating disorder voice was telling you to do, the way to get out of it was do the opposite. So I shut the refrigerator, went, Ed, shut up. And I had to go back in and make a food choice. But that there was one day I did that, and I felt that separation of I'm starting to see that all this mental static is not me. It's this other thing having a lot of influence, and that influence is starting to weaken. So all that in terms of narratives, when I say getting the story straight, is we have made it, what I call attachments, judgments to anything and everything that has happened in our lives. We have told ourselves a story based on our interpretation of an event. So for example, my perpetrator raped me. My mind, based on some events that happened shortly thereafter, were that people are mad at me, I'm wrong. I did something wrong. I'm ashamed. I don't matter. I screwed up. All these things. So right there's a critical emotional attachment as a 7-year-old that upon which the rest of my life was built until I finally broke out of it. When in actuality, and part of what I worked through with my counselor in recovery was to, and working through the trauma, is to detach from that. To look at it from what I call observer mode. And this is some of the stuff, some of the skills I teach as I work with my life coaching clients, is I teach them about the tool of without attachment, that when we can look at something as an observer, In this, so let's use an example. A situation at the office, and a coworker is frustrated and voices that frustration in a loud, boisterous tone towards you. Okay. So your mind, because of history, may say, I screwed up. I did something wrong. This person's mad at me. And they're right there, there's an attachment to it. But if I step out and look at it without that emotional attachment, I can say, okay, this person is frustrated about this situation. I happen to be the one she felt safe or he felt safe sharing that frustration with. And it was not directed at me. I don't have any responsibility in this. I got to be a sounding board. There's a whole different dynamic to that from this person's mad at me and I screwed up to I got to be a sounding board for this person to help them vent. And so it's all that is what I mean by getting the story straight is that as we look at the events of our lives, to be able to remove the attachment we have to it and be able to step back and view it like kind of like we're a fly on the wall or a bird, or I think of police, just the facts, ma'am. Simply, what happened? This is what happened. This is what I observed. As we start doing that, we can then open up the door to see things from a different angle. And when we remove that emotional attachment and see it from a different angle, we are able to start allowing ourselves the possibility of a different interpretation. And in that, the self-blame starts to diminish, the depression, the anxiety, the self-hatred, the negative self-talk, all those things start to diminish because we're not judging ourselves. When we have an attachment to something, we have made a judgment and we don't have all the facts.
I smiled when you said, did you say, is your eating disorder voice Ed? Ed?
Ed,
Yes. Okay. So I smiled when you said,
yep.
shut up, Ed, because I recognize that, you know, we don't always have a solid awareness of how our stories and our thought processes impact us, right?
Interpretations,
Yes,
yes.
we don't always have an awareness. And I think one of the things that I learned as I became a coach was that the direct link between thoughts, feelings, emotions, and action. And I remember Dan starting to actively challenge my thought processes and the thoughts that would pop up in my head. And I would literally be at the sink washing dishes and have this like random thought and say out loud, no, we're not going there, boo. I would be walking on the street randomly. No, we're not going there, boo. And because like now I could actually pinpoint the thoughts that were no longer serving me, that were creating anxiety or creating anger, because anger was a huge thing for me, right? And anger is often a misplaced emotion, right? Like we are quick to anger, but really the reason why I'm angry is because of the hurt that I'm feeling or the pain that I'm in. But for me, that anger showed up tremendously. So being able to see the direct line of how I processed my thoughts and how it then became how I showed up. It's so freeing when you get that part. I mean, and it's still work, right? Like you still have to challenge yourself consistently, but that awareness, I think out of all of the healing that I've done, I believe that piece right there, recognizing how much power my thoughts actually had, and that I had the power to change them, was
Yes.
like life-changing for me.
And that's a critical point, Felicia, because when we are in survival mode, we have relinquished our power. We have re relinquished the influence we have over our own lives. We have relinquished the influence, in this case for me, that Christ has in my life. And when we put ourselves first, we really screw things up. And
Did we have one?
Especially when we don't have the story straight, we're building on a weak foundation. The longer you're built on, you're going to fall at some point in time. So the point you made about taking our power back, that is powerful right there. And it's in the little steps where we do that. Now, one of the things I also coach my clients through is what I call throwing a pebble on the anxiety train track, because those thoughts can just start racing. And then we're like off to the races, literally. And gratitude and anxiety cannot coexist, it is scientifically proven, because they come from the same part of the brain. So I work with my clients about how to throw a pebble on the anxiety train track. And it is so encouraging. They come back after a week of trying it. And then to hear them months after the fact, I'm still using that tool. And now I'm telling other people about it. That is the power of coaching, of the little things that make the biggest of differences. And we take our power back one step at a time.
Absolutely. And a huge part of thriving in life is radical ownership across the board, your story, your thoughts, your actions, all of it. Radical ownership. Sue, I really enjoyed this conversation. So tell us how we can connect with you online.
Yeah, the best way, you can go to my website, suebowles.com, and you can catch me there. But what I'd like to offer your listeners and viewers is that I have what I call a Wednesday hump day help. Everybody needs some encouragement, especially as we're struggling through these different things about trying to change, get out of survival mode, or maybe struggling from, we thought we were, now we're not, or whatever. I have an encouragement text I send out, and I'd love to get that to you. Go to the website, suebowles.com, sign up for that. When you sign up for it, I also have a little sheet that speaks directly to what Leticia and I were just talking about how to start changing that narrative, how to start taking those thoughts captive. And it helps bring up some more things to be aware of as you start that journey. So sign up for the text club, and I'd love to get that to you as well.
Yes, go ahead and sign up, listeners. Sue, thank you so much for your time. Listeners, thank you for catching another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. And I want to remind you, you were not built to break, but you damn sure were not built to just survive. Disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I will see you next week.